provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about venture capital in CW 2930. Frenis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into what's been buzzing on LinkedIn about venture capital over the past couple of weeks. That's calendar weeks 29 and 30. And it's not just about, you know, who raised what. We're really looking at the evolving landscape, the strategic thinking, and how the industry is adapting.
Exactly. The insights we've gathered, they really highlight this significant shift towards introspection, I'd say, within the industry. There's a critical eye on things like data literacy, and some genuinely innovative new models are popping up. You'll hear about how VCs are sort of rethinking their playbooks, and importantly, how founders are navigating this whole changing environment. It's fascinating stuff, really.
Okay, let's unpack this then. So one of the dominant points emerging, it seems, is around how VCs perceive and use data, and maybe even the structure of the industry itself. It sounds like many are recognizing a potential blind spot, data literacy.
Yeah, what's truly fascinating here is Andrew Chan's observation. He points out that VCs often lack maybe deep data literacy. And this isn't just a small thing. It points to a fundamental vulnerability, right? If VCs can't robustly question or fully understand their data sources, well, decision-making becomes much more prone to bias. Think about it. Unlike science, there's often no real peer review process for VC insights, so it's absolutely crucial to question the data that's driving these big investment decisions.
That's a powerful point.
And this data challenge, this potential blind spot, maybe it ties into something else we're seeing, the geographical concentration of capital. Ilya Strebulaev, for instance, points out how U.S. venture capital is still heavily clustered. You know, the San Francisco Bay Area and New York City alone, they lead the pack. We're talking almost a third of all senior VCs in the entire U.S. That kind of concentration is pretty striking, especially with all the talk about diversification.
Right. And if we connect that concentration to the bigger picture, Dan G even threw out a pretty provocative idea. He suggested the VC industry might operate a bit like a cartel, you know, because of its close-knit relationships. It's not just about networks. It implies a system where maybe competition gets stifled, creating barriers, channeling capital based on relationships, maybe more than just pure merit. And Johannes Prather emphasizes this concern too, noting how just 11 U.S. companies dominate global VC. That raises some serious questions about Europe's ability to innovate and compete, particularly for those really crucial early stage startups.
Makes you think about access, doesn't it?
A cartel? That's strong language. It certainly raises a big question. Is the traditional VC model still working in this new reality? Danilo Toro thinks it fundamentally needs to change. He's arguing that with AI now, startups need exclusive assets, strong distribution channels, not just a good product anymore. He proposes VCs focus on assets before code and distribution before intros. Interesting framing. And James Hickson highlights this trend where large funds are taking really minimal ownership in highly valued AI companies. Is that still classic venture capital? Or is it, like he suggests, maybe just logo shopping for optics rather than real conviction?
It is a critical point, this idea of conviction and what VC really is. And Peter Walker's data from Carta, it's quite sobering. It shows LPs, that's the limited partners, the investors in the VC funds, they often wait over 10 years just to get their initial capital back. Think about that, a decade. And even then, only about half the funds from 2011-2014 hit 1x DPI, meaning they just broke even on distributed capital. It just powerfully underscores that VC isn't a quick win. It's a really long-term, often illiquid game. Rahul Mathur also helps demystify this, explaining VCs are primarily money managers investing a corpus, not just investors, dispelling some common myths there about fund life cycles and roles.
It's fascinating, though, isn't it? Even as the industry grapples with these big structural questions, there are these incredible signals of progress, and often from maybe unexpected places. One of the most compelling trends we saw really highlights untapped potential, specifically with female founders. Lisa the Carer shared the amazing news about Mira Murati, securing a record $2 billion seed round for Thinking Machines Lab. I mean, that's truly monumental, especially when women typically get only, what, 2 to 3% of global VC funding? And Melissa DeWar's insights from the Female Founders Fund's 10-year review, they reinforce this. Female-founded startups delivered 24% of U.S. exits in 2024. It clearly shows performance isn't the issue, it's access. That kind of success should be a huge signal.
Absolutely. And building on this idea of the VC model adapting, another significant area isn't just internal changes, but external ones. How are established corporations engaging with startups, corporate venturing, strategic partnerships? These aren't just buzzwords anymore. They're becoming a really critical path for both startups and large companies, aligning collaboration with long-term R&D.
Yeah, we're seeing major legacy firms step up. Ernest Sweat highlighted Deloitte Ventures' $150 million strategy. It shows how a traditional firm can build a really resilient, conviction-driven venture platform. And Tamara Steffens, who contributed to that CVC playbook from Counterpart Ventures, she emphasizes how important a fund's brand is. It becomes a deal funnel itself, alongside just having operational clarity. It's not just money. It's the strategic value add.
Spot on. Gary Deschnitsky's presentation, which Valerie Yakubovich shared, it revealed this plethora of practices in corporate venturing. Everything from accelerators to venture clienting. And they all have diverse objectives. It proves there's no single script for CVC success. Mark Kleiner echoes this too, discussing how successful CVCs explore a whole range of models, venture clienting, studios, direct investments. The diversity is definitely key.
And just to give you a concrete example of that strategic value, Matthew Alanis shared a case. A corporate VC investing, say, $1, $5 Mallers in food, retail, tech. But crucially, offering tens of thousands of distribution points for those startups. Now that's a powerful, tangible strategic advantage, way beyond just capital. And Grace Gaughan's Venture with Grace recap, it highlighted conversations with CVC leaders like Mark Silberman from Comcast Ventures, really digging into how strategic and financial priorities mix for corporate investors.
And it's not just the big U.S. players either. Yunus Celebeler's podcast episode with Inalkin Gulek from Exim Ventures, that gives an inside look at a CVC's role specifically in the Turkish ecosystem. They talk about focusing on promising industries, but also investing in other VC funds, too. It's a great example of CVCs playing a really significant regional ecosystem building role.
Okay, so let's switch gears. Where is the capital actually flowing? The map of VC investment seems to be changing quite a bit. While we see mid-sized initiatives getting funding, some really significant regional shifts are happening.
Yeah, a huge story coming out of Germany, highlighted by several people, Sharon Maroon, Oliver B., Dr. Fabian Mehring, Karsten Maschmeyer, Benjamin Visser. Bavaria is actually surpassing Berlin in venture capital inflow. In the first half of 2025, Bavaria pulled in 2.1 billion euros compared to Berlin's 1.5 billion. They're particularly strong in AI, smart defense systems, and energy tech. It's being called a game changer for Europe, and partly because the Bavarian parliament now allows foundations to invest up to 5% of their assets into VC funds. That's a major legislative boost.
That is fascinating, a real regional power shift. And Dr. Tanja Emmerling reports the overall German startup economy is growing again. 4.6 billion euros invested in H1 2025. That's a 34% increase year on year, outperforming many neighbors, with AI and energy still leading. However, Sebastian Becker sounds a note of caution. European VC fundraising is apparently on track for its lowest level in a decade. Even as we enter what many are calling this super cycle of innovation in AI, quantum, and more, it feels like a really pivotal, maybe complex moment for European innovation, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Meanwhile, the UK, as Luca Leone details, it continues to dominate European VC. Over $8 billion raised in H1 2025. That's more than Germany and France combined, driven significantly by AI. In contrast, Pierre-Edouard Puteau reports that French tech saw a pretty notable drop, 35% in VC investment value in H1 2025. And Farhaz Magen's KPMG UK report, it confirms strong UK VC deals continue, especially in AI, defense tech, and space, despite the overall slowdown.
Interesting contrast there. And speaking of policy impact, a major development here in the U.S. is this One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or OBBA. Monica Zent, Pavel Prada, Chris Harvey, they all highlight significant changes to qualified small business stock, QSBS, benefits. For founders and investors, you really need to pay attention to this. It means graduated exit timelines, higher tax-exempt caps, expanded asset limits. This could seriously accelerate liquidity events and offer huge tax advantages on exit. It might fundamentally reshape how you think about selling your company.
That is huge. And looking beyond Europe for a sec, Erdinca Kinci's takeaways on the Middle East startup scene really emphasize founder market fit, relationship-first fundraising. Dubai is emerging as a global testbed. Philip Bahashi discusses how rising U.S. inflation could delay rate cuts, increase investor caution, potentially impacting MENA VC. And Ansoni notes that while Indian startups contribute significantly to GDP, funding is slowing. Valuation mismatches, macro uncertainties, even though VCs have dry powder. And across the board, Taiwo Fadilsani highlights this global shift in VC focus towards deep tech, you know, for transformative impact, outsized returns. Things like advanced materials, robotics, sustainable energy.
Right. And on the investment front itself, Oleksandr Sechuk notes robust Q2 AI investment. But yeah, a clear shift away from those mega deals, more toward emergent, vertical-focused AI solutions. Yet, Firdaus Negri raises a valid concern. Is VC favoring AI too much, leading to this concentration of funding in just a few companies, potentially crowding out other innovation? Still, you see success stories. Ross Mandel shared NetCohen's journey, LinkMe startup to $100 million valuation, and Guy Ward-Thomas celebrating DN Capital's big exit. Cognigy acquired by Nice for $955 million, Europe's largest AI exit to date. So big numbers are still moving.
Indeed. And Sembo Bhavev reported that April secured $38 million Series B. They integrate tax into financial decisions. It reflects that continued investment in fintech platforms and those vertical AI solutions you mentioned. Okay, so this final cluster of insights, it's really all about the practical advice, the strategies for founders trying to navigate this, well, complex landscape, everything from valuation to fundraising.
Yeah.
Valuation, it's a constant topic. A recurring theme from people like Alejandro Cremades and Dustin Logan is that it's less about a strict formula, much more about negotiation based on future potential, exit goals. But Nelly Orlova gives a crucial warning. Founders need to be careful about aiming too high on valuation. It can lead to painful down rounds later, making future fundraising really tough. The key, as John Chu also points out, seems to be leveraging your growth story, but with realistic market comparisons.
Absolutely. In Yasmin Butt's summary of Tech Weekend 2025, it highlighted discussions on shifting VC expectations, what makes a founder stand out. It's not just the idea. Stefan Solberger, for instance, emphasizes that founder egos can be a real deal breaker for professional investors. They prioritize strong teams, sometimes even over brilliant ideas. The thinking is a great team can make a less than perfect idea work. And Kalechi Akinonu highlights operational efficiency, often underrated, but a crucial differentiator for early stage success.
That's such important advice. And if you're a first-time founder constantly hearing, you're too early, Pat Matthews gives some really direct, actionable advice. Basically, you need to out-hustle and create urgency. That means building a technical team, nailing first impressions, building an audience, making fast product progress, showing momentum, maybe joining an accelerator, spending time in SF if you can, and running a really tight fundraising process. Kevin Jurevich also helps out, listing 22 top seed investors, but advising founders have significant traction before reaching out, or maybe use platforms like Hubble for connections.
Yeah, very practical steps. Ruben Dominguez at UBAR gathers some excellent guides for founders on fundraising too. How to thrive in VC 3.0, how to talk to investors effectively, emphasizing founder market fit. And looking at the other side, Zujian shared insights on Boris Musilak's journey, successfully transitioning from founder to VC in Europe, highlighting these pathways into a VC career for ex-founders. It's not always a straight line.
And finally, a really interesting development is how AI is impacting the VCs themselves. Giuseppe Scordato's piece highlights this. AI is actually revolutionizing VC by augmenting decision-making. Firms like Correlation Ventures, Titanium Ventures, they're using AI-driven models. And apparently, improving their hit rates, outperforming benchmarks. So it's clear AI isn't replacing VCs, but it's definitely augmenting them, giving them sharper tools for a complex landscape. Well, that brings us to the end of this deep dive. If you enjoyed it, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, be sure to check out our other editions covering private equity, M&A, and strategy and consulting.
And considering all the profound shifts we've discussed today, you know, from geographical power dynamics, the changing nature of valuation, the increasing role of AI, what one core assumption about venture capital do you think will be completely redefined for you in the next year? Something to think about.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss our next episode.